NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go. Back in the can for another edition of the Lunatic Fringe podcast and another face across the seas to sit and have a chat with. Tell me, who the fuck are you and what do you do?
My name is Andy Van Handel, better known to a lot of my skydiving comrades as Bad Andy. That's a whole nother story. I'm a weekend warrior skydiver. I pretty much just jump on the weekends and at our little small boogies that we throw on our small Cessna drop zone. Monday through Friday, I'm actually an LTL truck driver. That's what pays the bills. It pays pretty well. So crazy hours, but, you know, we got to do what we got to do.
Dude, I tell you what, that makes you kind of a kindred spirit to me because I often said as a jump pilot, a longtime jump pilot, the only difference between me and a truck driver is two extra directions.
And a few wheels, right?
And a few wheels, yeah. But, I mean, fuck, man. That's a lot of time in the seat. People have no idea what it takes to be in control of a massive machine like that for hours and hours and hours on end.
mean, to be fair, I'm a local truck driver, so lots of stops, lots of deliveries, lots of pickups, you know, and get to deal with pretty much the same customers all day, which I really like, and
It's
a lot
still,
of
man,
fun.
I mean, that's it's a lot of back and forth and a lot of shit to think about driving big machines.
Yep, that is true.
So tell me, how did not necessarily skydiving, but anything like that come into your life? Was this something you've been doing all your life or?
Well, my first skydive was November of 1999, so it's 25th season now. It's something I never really gave a ton of thought to. I was dating a girl for a year, and she's like, "Well, let's try skydiving." So we opened up the Yellow Pages. For those of you listening who don't know what the Yellow Pages are, it was this phone book you got when you had a landline phone, and we opened it up. We found the closest drop zone, and we both took the static line first jump course. I can't honestly tell you a damn thing about my first skydive other than the fact I know I did it. Mentally, I blacked out. The old static line hanging from the wing strut, off you go. Went to the second jump. I remember being really, really scared, wondering why the fuck I was doing it. And then that third jump, for some reason, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do that third jump, and that was the one that bit me hard. And I just kept going and going. And the girl I started with, she made that third jump with me, and then she's like, "What would you say if I never wanted to skydive again?" I'm like, "That's cool, but I'm not stopping." And I kept going. I knew after about the third jump. Not just the jumps, obviously that was a huge, huge part of it, but the community was the really, really big thing for me. And I knew I wanted to become a static line instructor. And the time you had to get your coach rating first, you still do. And then I got my tandem instructor rating when I had the jumps and the years in the sport, and been throwing drogues a whole lot more than sport jumps since, which, dude, I'm totally fine with. I've heard on your podcast too that it's always your favorite type of jump. And everyone's like, "Why don't you do a fun jump?" I'm like, "Brother, they're all fun. Every one of them. I sit on a tandem, I got somebody to talk to on the way down."
Well, and it's a comfort thing too, right? I mean, when more than three quarters of your jumps are attached to another person towing a drogue. That's just what you're comfortable with, you know? So, I mean, if somebody were to ask me the most secure jump for me, it's probably going to be doing a tandem. I remember getting back on a sport rig after having only done tandems for a long time, feeling like there was a whole lot of shit missing.
It's a crazy dynamic when you think about it, because from an instructor's point of view, tandems can be really fucking dangerous. I mean, the gear's different, everything about that jump is different. You're taking an unknown variable strapped to you leaving an airplane. What could possibly go wrong, right? You know.
Well, that was always the old joke is when people say that they were getting burned out on skydiving or that it just wasn't as exciting as it used to be. You'd just go, well, get your tandem rating.
Yeah, no doubt.
So
No
now,
doubt. And
where was this first jump you did? What drop zone?
okay, so my first jump was at Skydive Adventure in Omro, Wisconsin. It was just west of Oshkosh, where the big fly-in is every year up here. And yeah, we jumped all during that fly-in. I don't know how
Oof.
many times I'd open up the door on a static line instructor, being the instructor, open up the door, look, shut it, tell the pilot to go around because the plane's right underneath us. They would have a group called Superior Air Parts, I believe, back at the time. During one of the days at EA, they'd basically rent out the drop zone for all their people. They have a little party. We'd do tandems. I think I was doing small flag jumps at like 200 jumps or something crazy. I look at that now, it's pretty wild. But I remember one time doing a tandem, and I look to the north. There was Lake Butamore was there, and I saw two warbirds flying towards me, not at the same altitude. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna fly this way because they probably have no idea I'm here. And then I look over my shoulder, there was two more, then two more, two more. There was like 11 of them. And the German guy had on me, he's like, "That's as good, that's as fun." And I'm like, dude, you have no idea. I don't need to see that ever again.
That's one of those things where ignorance is absolutely bliss. If you don't know how fucked up a situation is, it's good.
Yeah, that was a fun little drop zone. I made my first, oh God, I don't know, 1,000 jumps there, probably between there and the World Free Fall Convention.
Now,
Yeah,
Wisconsin's
it was
kind of
good.
that's a tough place to start out, though, because I mean, obviously, it's a very limited season. As soon as it starts getting fucking cold, it's cold.
Yeah, it does. That first year must have been like an El Nino year or whatever they call it, because it was warm in November those first year or two. And man, when I started, I didn't give a fuck how cold it was. Just dress up for it, you know, as long as the plane was flying. And hey, the plane climbs quicker, parachutes fly a little crisper in the cold, right? So
Sure.
now I got enough jumps. I can take a winter off, you know, and get back into it in the spring.
There's something to be said for being a fair weather weekend warrior for sure, man, because you get to kind of pick and choose, and it's not a holy shit, I gotta get out and jump, and you get to shed a little bit of that I need a fix kind of mentality and go out and pick those days you really enjoy.
Yeah, and I think it's what's kept me from getting burnt out too, you know, because after I left AMRO, after 6 years there, let's just say I had a slight falling out with the ownership. I mean, it's all water under the bridge now. It was years ago already, but I went up to a different drop zone, another 182 drop zone, and those last couple of years that they were open, I was the only TI. So every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 10, 12 tandems out of a 182.
Oh.
So at the end of the season, I was burnt out. Like I was like, okay, woo, season's done. Time to rest up. And that just kind of carried over into now where I'm jumping now. I have a few more instructors, so I don't get quite the burnout factor, but I still take the winters off, and I think that's what kind of keeps me from getting totally burnt out.
Sure. Well, and for those that are out there jumping turbine drop zones that have no idea what a 10 load day in a Cessna is like, man, oh man. And I look back at, I did the same thing when I was jumping for Skydive Las Vegas, and it was all tandems during the week. And you'd have a 10 tandem day and just be fucking destroyed. But cut to going to Cross Keys a bunch of years later, we were doing 25 a day every Saturday and Sunday and feeling fresher than after a 10 day, 10 jump Cessnas.
Yeah, it's you find muscles you didn't know you had.
Oh, and
And
the
as I age, like there was a one of the Sigma Tandem instructors group I'm on Facebook. This was a year or two ago. Somebody proposed a question about RSIs, repetitive strain injuries. And reading that was a lot of that stuff on there is kind of whatever it is, but that was a pretty educational one because I find myself now, okay, I'm going to put my foot this way on the step and move this way in the airplane. And, you know, just so I'm not some goddamn sore at the
Oh,
end of the
yeah. Well,
workload day.
shit, man. I think the only thing holding me together are all the repetitive stress injuries linked together. It's just one big ow every morning.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. I totally hear that.
It's funny too, because you can trace a lot of it back to stuff like that. You know, I mean, the right knee takes a beating, getting out of the door, the way you put your ankle on the step, your right shoulder, especially not just because it's the drogue arm, but because you're having to use it in the door jam to maneuver out, all kinds of shit that you don't think about. And then you have these collections of bruises that don't fade for years because you just keep bashing into the same place.
That is the truth, man. My shoulders are what's taken the most beating on me. This in the last year or so, I actually went into some what do they call it? Regenerative medicine. Kind of a new thing where they take your plasma and your stem cells, and they inject them into the aching joints, and it's supposed to heal them up over time. So far, so good. The downfall to that, it's really expensive and not covered by insurance, but
Sure.
you know what, man? If it can extend me for another 10, 15 years doing tandems, I'm good with that.
Oh yeah, man. I finally broke down and had my first cortisone and what is it, that hydrolic acid shot into my right shoulder. So I'm halfway through the expected benefit part of that. And it's the best my shoulders felt in 20 years. Obviously that's a temporary fix. And of course, like a lot of tandem instructors, either do or will have, I have arthritis in my right shoulder. Again, repetitive stress over and over. And I'm told that the only way to permanently fix that is a fucking shoulder replacement. Man, I'm not ready for that yet.
For me, I wanted to avoid surgery because I justify the cost of what I did because the cost of me having 6-8 weeks off of work for a shoulder surgery recovery is pretty much the same. I mean, I make pretty good money driving and I didn't want that time off. The surgery itself, that whatever it is, what it is the recovery that was kind of
scary. Sure. Well, I mean, who in the modern world has 8 weeks to just throw away? You know, and very few employers are helping with anything like that. And, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not independently wealthy. So having to take 2 or 3 months off to recover for an injury is just rough.
Yeah, indeed.
So now you we'll jump back a little bit again. You started out by doing your static line, something that I've actually only ever seen once or twice. I was lucky enough to do the tandem progression and then into AFF back in the day. Especially because you've been in it so long, did you go through and you became a tandem instructor? Did you go through and get your AFF as well?
Oh, I actually went to a pre-course. This was, man, 10, 15 years ago. In Ohio, is Start Skydiving at the time. A gentleman by the name of Kip Lowmiller, when he was still doing rating courses, we took the pre-course, and I learned a ton in that 3 or 4 days in the pre-course, mainly of which I'm a bigger guy. I don't have the fucking range. I tried every style of jumpsuit. There was no way. Like, I could fall slower, but I couldn't do shit.
Sure.
Now, that said, I learned a ton in that pre-course, so it was not a wasted trip.
Sure.
In fact, it's kind of funny going back to this comfort zone and tandems. Kip knew, myself and the other guy that was down there with, he knew tandems were our comfort thing, and they were busy on tandems. Like, why don't you guys go throw a few drugs? Kind of get away from the stress of it. You know, it's like, I think of that, and I was like, boy, how ironic is that? You know, but yeah, I didn't do the AFF thing. I realized it wasn't for me, so.
It's funny. I did my course, my AFF course at Skydive Arizona with Billy Rhodes long before he passed. And Billy's a big guy, but that guy, I swear to God, he had a fucking anti-gravity vest or something that he could use because he could float like nobody I'd ever seen. And, you know, the pre-course is stressful, but the course itself, I wasn't able to go to his pre-course because work just didn't allow it. And I met the guy. And I knew that the AFF course was a mind fuck. Like, people had told me, look, only half of this is the jumping. The other half is all the shit they do to you on the ground to make sure you can handle the stress. And I meet Billy. I'm super excited. And if anybody had ever met Billy, he was this big, very Southern guy with this very thick accent. And I walk up, Mr. Rhodes, pleasure to meet you. Really excited to do the course. And he's all, I don't believe I saw you in my pre-course. And I'm like, no, I wasn't able to make it because of work. And he just kind of smiled and nodded his head. He says, don't believe I've ever passed anybody that hasn't taken my pre-course. But you have a nice night and we'll see you tomorrow in the morning. And I remember just going, oh, it's going to be that kind of fucking week.
Hey, skydiving really is a big mind fuck, isn't it?
Oh, man. Well, and that's the other thing too, right? Is with tandems, I know I'm gonna take good care of that student. I know I know what I'm doing. I've seen and done enough to know that I'm a proficient tandem instructor. But with AFF, there's a whole new roll of the dice there that you just might not be able to do what needs to be done, and that's some shit.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's definitely. So you went through and I mean, obviously in a smaller Cessna drop zone, takes a while to build up the jump numbers to go out to get your tandem instructor rating. So what was your progression like?
I made my first jump in November in 99. I got my tandem rating in October of 2003. I was lucky enough when I started, the drop zone owner in Amro there, Bill Hassenfuss, I don't know if you've heard the name or not, but somewhat of a local legend in he retired in 2015, I believe, with 58 years in the sport.
Wow.
So in 2003, I got my tandem rating, but I was lucky enough in the beginning that, let's just say, I put a lot of jumps on credit there to the point where I got pulled aside. He's like, you got to pay your bill. Like, okay. It was quite high after going to dad saying I need a little personal loan to pay the bill. Finally, a tandem course came around in Skydive, Michigan, which was a smaller drop zone in Marshall, Michigan. And I went over, drove over there for the weekend, took the tandem course, and I initially got my tandem rating on Strongs on the old set 400s.
Yeah, man.
Lots of toggle pressure, man. But yeah, I got my initial tandem rating on the set 400s. Had my, I don't know, my first 500 or 600 tandems were on those. And then when I went up to Green Bay Skydivers in 2006, they had Vectors and Sigmas. So I got cross-trained again by Kip Lohmiller back then. I didn't know Michael Watkins is the guy we always use now. He's our regional director, best at what he does. Anyway, I got Vector rated and Sigma rated as well. And of course, then they phased out all the old Vector rigs, and now I'm pretty much have only jumped Sigmas since.
I did my initial course on the Vector and probably my first 1,000 tandems on the old Vectors, and of course back then they were the shit. You know, I mean, we were flying the old F-111 360s, 421s, and 500s, and every one of them. And
Easy 384s.
yeah, man, everyone was a guaranteed fucking neck breaker, but you just didn't know any better, you know. And then I transitioned over to Strong, and going from the old Vector to a Strong, oh, it was heaven. Oh yeah, you're sitting head up. You throw the handles out the door, and you're just basically wearing a sport rig. And it was just, I really enjoyed the Strong. The only thing that I didn't like was you'd always constantly have to retighten the laterals to get them. I liked them really, really snug on me. That was my personal profession or preference. But then, of course, the Sigmas came along, and hanging off your ass wasn't nearly like it was with the old Vectors, and it was a much more comfortable system. So, but I never had a problem with the Strongs. I quite enjoyed jumping them, and I probably put 3, maybe 4,000 tandems on Sigmas.
I think the Strongs
Or Strongs, I should say.
Vectors and Sigmas are awesome systems. I think they're very user friendly. I actually think they're a little bit safer in some aspects,
Sure.
but the Strongs were workhorses, man.
Yeah.
Those things, you could beat the shit out of them. In fact, there's a DZO, one of the DZs up in Wisconsin here. He jumps Sigmas, but he even said he's like, from a DZO point of view, Strongs are way better because they're just more durable.
Well, and the funny thing is, the Strongs would show up from the factory already ugly as fuck. I mean,
True story.
just not a pretty rig. Shit hanging out all over the place, cables poking out everywhere, man. It just, if you didn't know what you were looking at, you would think that that one was in for repair, because holy shit, that can't be right, you know?
That's so true.
So you mentioned going to the convention, man. I never made it to the convention. That was, I mean, you tell me, what was your experience like?
So for a 182 jumper like myself, having never even seen an otter or a casa, and I remember before I went the first time, it would have been 2000, 2001. The last year was in Quincy, was the first year that I went, and then the next year I went to Rantoul. But this guy said to me, my instructor, he's like, it's like fucking Disneyland for us. You can literally walk up, get on King Air, Casa, Twin Otter, whatever, you know, and it literally was that first day. I think I made five or six jumps out of all different airplanes, you know, and
Nice.
so it was a cool experience. The partying was legendary,
Sure.
before everybody had a fucking camera in their pocket,
Sure.
I mean, that kind of, I think everybody having a camera in their pocket ru ruined the old school boogie partying, I think, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure. Well, who was it? Uncle, I think it was Uncle Bill told me a story of somebody spiking one of the open water supplies with LSD back in the day in the convention. And this would have been in like the 70s. So you can imagine. Holy fuck, man.
Yeah, it was a good time. I mean, you're camping out at a fucking airport. I had this little two-man tent. So by it's in August in central Illinois. So by 5 o'clock in the morning, it is a sauna inside the tent. So you're getting up. If you didn't already wake up from Mike Mullen's King Air doing the sunrise loads or the hot air balloons 200 yards away from our tents, and
All right.
you didn't go to sleep, put it that way.
No. Well, and I mean, that was kind of what it was famous for, right? But it was also like I started in 96. And obviously the reputation for the convention gets around quite quickly. And my instructors, when I initially started, were like, yeah, you don't need to go there. Like it's pretty fucking hardcore. Like a good year is when only one person goes in, and I'm like, whoa, I don't, I,
Yeah,
yeah.
we always camped out near the swoop pond, and we saw a couple people hit hard. And one of our guys up from our DZ was an EMT. He ran over there, helped him out of the pond, and helped him into the ambulance. And he came back, and he's like, "He ain't gonna make it." I mean, I looked up just in time to see the huge splash, and I'm going, "Ooh, that is not good," and. When we used to go to the Couch Freaks Boogie as well. I went there 2 years, and you probably don't need to ask me what happened there because I
Sure.
don't remember much of it either year,
Sure.
just because it was 2 weeks after the convention and I didn't have any money, but I sure did party those 2 years. I mean,
Oh
it was
yeah. Well, I mean, that was
yeah, it
like
was.
the whole 2 years I did Cross Keys. We didn't need to go to the big party boogies because that was just our drop zone. I mean, it was, you didn't have to go anywhere for that. So believe me, I definitely know what it's like to go, what the fuck did I do last week?
Been there.
You know, and I'll tell you what, I love being on the backside of it and having lived all those experiences. I wouldn't want to do it again. But I'm also thrilled to see the level of safety and professionalism has ratcheted up so much over the intervening years that I don't think those out of control parties coupled with the jumping are possible anymore. I think you can go party your ass off or you can go jump your ass off, but I don't think so much of both happens anymore.
Yeah, I would agree. Like I'm at a small drop zone still, small little club drop zone, and one of the safety and training advisors, one of three there, and we police it pretty well. I mean, police is, I don't really like using that word either, but
Sure.
we watch everybody pretty well, and it's literally a second family to everybody. So we're always scratching each other's backs and looking out for
Sure.
each other.
Well, I think the mentality is do what you're going to do, just don't expect to be able to get on the airplane tomorrow, you know? And so, and that's just common sense, you know? I mean, Summerfest now is arguably the biggest boogie on the planet every year. But Summerfest also has an amazing reputation for safety and for people taking care of each other. And I know a lot of jumpers that go to Summerfest with absolutely no intentions of jumping. Like, I'm not going to Summerfest to jump out of an airplane. I'm going to be on a raft in the middle of the pond until the sun goes down, and then I'm going to be out of control. Or it's the I'm going because so and so is load organizing and I want to learn everything I can and I'm going to jump my ass off kind of thing, which is super cool.
My one visit to Chicagoland Skydiving Center in Rochelle, we went down there seeing the weather forecast, and it's about 3.5 hours or so for me to get there. We saw the weather forecast. We're all like, screw it. Let's go down there. We'll camp out. We'll party. And they had to deal with, oh, it's your first jump here. Their first jump was on the house. We're manifesting. They're telling us as I look at everybody like, well, Looks like I know how many jumps I'm gonna do this weekend. The free one, and that was it. And we partied like three, four nights in a row, three, four in the morning, and then we're like 2 weeks later, I finally felt right. You know, I just don't recover like I used to.
No, well, that's the thing, right? Is it's the same as with being a busy tandem instructor or being a party skydiver. The older you get, the harder it is to pull off.
Yeah, you got that right.
So, hey, when we initially talked, it was because you had a bunch of really cool events and some stuff that you represent going. So I wanted to definitely not glaze over that, and I want you to tell me all about this stuff.
All right. So in 2015, we started an event called Freedom Free Fall. Every year that we've done the event, I sent an article to Parachutist to the point where Laura, Parachutist editor, she looks forward to the article every year, you know.
Nice.
And so a little backstory to the event. Back in 2013 or 2014, I'm not a big believer in that fate and the stars align and all that, but I met a female student skydiver up at Green Bay Skydivers. I'm gonna withhold her name because I don't know if she wants, you know, whatever,
Sure.
but she had lost her fiance to PTSD suicide. Her fiance was a veteran. She had used to live in Colorado. She made a skydive to memorialize him because he was airborne and all this. And she's telling me the story. I'm like, wow, what an incredible story. Well, she had learned that skydiving was her therapy. Like, wow. So we just started talking, and I didn't know a whole lot about the veteran suicide rate or the or any of that stuff, PTSD. And we just got chit chatting. In the meantime, Green Bay Skydivers actually closed its doors. We had kept in touch. And then she hooked up with a group called HUA. It stands for Helping Out Our American Heroes. Anybody that knows anything about the Army, HUA is an Army slang. It's the Navy and the Marines. They got hoorah. The Army is HUA. It just happens that Helping Out Our American Heroes, they've got chapters in a couple different states. Anyway, long story short, I got in contact with the drop zone where I started skydiving in Amro. And I knew they were getting set to retire, but it was their last couple of years. So we talked a bit. I was already jumping there on pretty much every weekend. Well, HUA organized, they got in touch with the VFW or the Legion, American Legion, in one of the small towns down there. And they gathered up nine veterans to make skydives at the total 100% paid for cost of this organization, HUA. And that first year, I'm driving out to the drop zone. It's August. It's hotter than hell. I'm going, man, this day is going to be miserable. I'm the only instructor. I got there. There were nine veterans from six different wars that day that I was taking. And I was
Wow.
told this. And in the meantime, prior to this, I watched the movie American Sniper, and the whole veteran PTSD thing is portrayed extremely well there. And it's
Sure.
a real thing. You know, 20 veterans a day are taking their own lives, you know. So going back to the drop zone armor, we had a couple media outlets through there covering this. And the jump I was the most nervous about was a 95-year-old World War II veteran
Sure.
who was a Marine paratrooper. And that generation, man, you cannot rattle those guys. He was calm as a cucumber in the airplane and on the whole jump. Meanwhile, in my mind, I'm going, don't fucking break him. Don't break him. You know, that's all I could think about, you know. But I called one of my comrades from Green Bay Skydivers. He was my camera flyer for years. He hadn't jumped in a while. He was getting set to get married the following weekend. So I called his fiance. I'm like, you got to let Eric come out here. I need his help for these jumps because we've done a few of these special needs jumps, you know, with their legs and
Sure.
everything. And I tell you, and then so that we had nine veterans covering six different conflicts from World War II all the way up to Iraq and Afghanistan. And meeting these veterans and seeing the camaraderie with these veterans, I'm going, wow, we can really help these guys because a lot of these military guys, they just need camaraderie. A lot of them don't even need to make the jump. They need the camaraderie that they had in the military, which, as you know, can be offered with skydiving. It's
Sure.
so similar and so close. So after that first day, I went home with tears in my eyes, not because I was tired and I was sore. I was, but I called the president of this WHO organization. Brother, we're doing this every single year. If I have to sell drugs on the street corner, we're going to do this. Because it costs a ton of money,
Of
right? I mean,
course.
to throw 10 people out of an airplane, and then the following year, we had a jumper from the Triple Nichols. Triple Nichols was one of the last segregated units in the army.
Wow.
He was in the army from between World War II and Korea. And when he walked out that day, he had his full jumpsuit on with all his airborne patches. I'm like, that's our guy. I didn't even meet him yet, but I knew that was our guy. And the following year, I think we put up 32, I want to say, out of a
Wow.
182. We had a couple different instructors too. I wasn't the only one, thankfully.
Sure.
My skydiving friends were gave me a lot of shit about not shutting up about the event, and it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, man. Because what?
So
Skydivers
after,
never fucking talk? Oh, come on.
right? So after the second year, the drop zone at Omro closed because the owners retired. So I went down to Seven Hills Skydivers, where I am currently. It's a club drop zone, so there's a president, a vice president, all that. And I went up to the president at the time, and I said, "Dude, Freedom Freefall needs a home." I said, "If it's not going to be here, it's going to be someplace." He's like, "Dude, let's do it here, during the fucking boogie." Like, I love that idea. We would have the head to the hills boogie, we called it, where we bring up CSC's pack up for 4 days. So we did it there, and like called up Hua. He came down. The president of Hua is like a big triathlete, marathon. He's still military, and he was down in Madison for a triathlon or whatever. And he checked it out. He's like, "This is cool, man." He's like, "All I got to do is book them." So I think we did like 30 some that year, and it's been so the next few years. It was just at Seven Hills during the bogey. 2020 with COVID, no one knew what the hell was going to happen because of
Sure.
COVID. Once we figured out everything was a go, we called Hua up, and Hua's like, "We want to expand this thing to other drop zones." I'm like, that's fucking awesome, right?
Yeah, man.
So in the meantime, friends of mine opened up the drop zone that was at Green Bay Skydivers. It's under a different name now, called Skydive Freefall Adventure. I call him up right after that phone call. I said, "Dude, what do you think?" He's like, "We're in." I couldn't even, didn't even finish my sentence. He's like, "We're in." Perfect. Well, then in the meantime of that year, National Hua got wind of this, and then it was at like six different drop zones that same year. The other drop zones, there's just one or two veterans, and they kind of just cycled them through like regular tandems.
Sure.
So we've scaled back to just the two drop zones because we want to make it a special event
Sure.
for the veterans. I don't know if you can see this pin on my hat here.
Yes, I
It's basically
can.
an airborne pin with a Hua logo. And that was the thing from the first event. The jumpers come down, we pin them like they do in the military. And
Sure.
so the second year of the event, we invited the veterans to that jumped the first year to come back for this sole purpose. And we have a picture out there of a 30-year-old female Kosovo veteran getting pinned by our World War II veteran. He saluted her. He saluted her. And she was taken back and saluted right back, and we got a picture of it.
Oh, that's
And
ridiculously amazing.
yeah, Ollie, our World War II veteran, died a couple years ago. He's 99. He lived a great life.
Sure.
But that picture is just like, wow. Like, it's not
It's
just the jumping, you know what I mean?
well, and from your perspective too, I mean, beside the fact that obviously you're helping raise awareness and you're helping each individual guy, just for you on a personal level, I mean, I know I don't consider myself a World War II expert by any means, but I definitely consider myself a bit of a buff, and there's a reason they called those guys the Greatest Generation. I mean, they just, man, the shit that they did and the shit that they lived through, and to come back and to keep it together, and go on to live these full lives, having to hide all the horrible shit that they had to deal with and not having anybody to talk to, for them to be able to round out their lives, finally realizing, hey, it doesn't have to be that way for everybody that comes behind me. What a great way to wrap things up. You know, and when a guy that lived and fought through World War II passes away at 99, it's hard to be sad, man. That's just an amazing, wonderful life that guy, you know, got to see that much of.
Yeah. So when he passed a few years ago, his, I don't know if you want to call him his caregiver, she worked at the McDonald's in Berlin, Wisconsin. Berlin's a tiny little small town, Wisconsin town. She said to me, because one of the points we've made since the first year is we'd make a nice edited video for these guys. And the first couple of years we would put on there where they served, the years they served. We haven't done that because, quite frankly, this thing's grown into a monster and there's a time factor.
Right.
But we gave these guys DVDs. DVDs are another thing in the past, but we gave these guys DVDs. But this woman calls me up or messages me saying, Andy, you have no idea how much that jump meant to Ollie. I'm like, really? Because, dude, I'm just throwing drugs, right? That's kind of the way I look at it.
Sure.
She's like, no. He came into McDonald's every single day for his coffee clutch group. I had to bring the computer to play the DVD on, but he kept on saying, I jumped with bad Andy. I'm like, I think about this now. I get a little choked up because it's so powerful. It's like, is this guy from Neenah, Wisconsin, that it's my purpose. It's totally my purpose in the sport now. And you know, this year we're going into our 10th year. The last 3 or 4 years it's been at Seven Hill Skydivers and at Skydive Free Fall Adventure up in Pulaski, which is just west of Green Bay. And we've put up, my wife actually told me, she kept track, she does all the videos, we put up 236 veterans in the 10 years.
Wow.
I'm friends with a lot of these vets and seeing how it's changed its life. One of the veterans we took the second year, he was Afghanistan Marine Corps veteran. A few years ago I was at the annual ruck march that HUA does. It's a 20-mile ruck march that you raise, that's their big fundraiser. They'll raise $150,000 in this one event so they can do the skydiving stuff and whatnot. But his civilian boss, who is a guy who helps with HUA, does what they call Operation Cold Snap, where they put furnaces into veterans' homes that need them and services and whatnot. But he's like, Andy, you got no idea what that jump did for Chris. I'm like, really? He's like, dude, he was headed down that dark path, and the dark path is usually not good, right? But since that jump, he's like, he's got a wife, he's got a kid, he's got a house, he's all squared away now.
Sure.
He's like, you were a direct part of that. I'm like, wow, that's heavy.
I mean, we know, and every skydiver knows what a transformative experience jumping and the community behind jumping can be. I mean, I can't even tell you how many conversations on this podcast with jumpers who were like, I didn't fucking care if I lived or died before I started skydiving. And then I started skydiving and realized, oh, you mean if I stay alive, I get to keep doing this with those people? Okay. You know, I mean, and some of the best in the world have had that exact thing to say, is skydiving saved my life. And to be able to pass that on to someone who's fighting God knows how many demons is just an amazing thing.
I mean, 9/11 comes to mind. I remember right after 9/11, when the whole world was ground to a halt. Rightfully so, I suppose. But I remember being out of the drop zone, just hanging out, cursing whoever did that to our country.
Yeah.
Because that was like I wanted to jump all the time back then. Like, that was my drug, you know, my fix. And, you know, you talk about like therapy. The girl I started skydiving with when we had broke up, it was tough. But I remember going out to the drop zone, and that was like, you know, talking to her, is like, oh, I'll stop skydiving for you, which turns out that was bullshit, right? but I made one skydive with a guy who had thousands of skydives. I think I had less than 100 at the time. It was just such a fun skydive. It was like the epiphany jump, going bing, yeah, I'm not quitting this shit.
Yeah.
This is me. This is who I am, you know, and
for sure.
Yeah, man, it's been a great ride.
I think everybody has either that jump or that time in the sport where they actually acknowledge to themselves, oh, I'm just a skydiver. Like, that's it. there's no way back now. Fuck, I guess this is me now.
Yeah, it's not what we do, it's who we are, you know.
Yeah. Well, it becomes so defining, right?
Yeah. And like I said, like after that first Freedom Free Fall event, I realized this is gonna take up a lot of my time, but this is who I am now. This is my purpose in the sport. And honestly, up until a couple of years ago, Hua did most of the organizing. In the last couple of years, I've kind of taken the reins a little bit because Hua's got so many different events and programs they do. They got scuba diving for the veterans. They got whitewater rafting, fishing, volleyball, you name it, they've got it. And they're always looking to add on, you know, which always takes a lot of fundraising, a lot of money and all and whatnot. And we're going into this year. It's going to be July 13th at Seven Hills Skydivers near Madison, July 20th at the next drop zone at Skydive Free Fall Adventure. This is the first year we're doing two separate dates. Somewhat selfishly on my part, I suggested this because of the fact that I want to be at both events. It's the 10th anniversary.
Sure.
So I'm like, yeah, I want to be at both. And so maybe it's a little selfish on my part, but man, there is nothing better than seeing the transformation. You know, this is a TI. In fact, sure. I took our club president's son over Washington Island, Wisconsin this past summer. And before the jump, you could tell shit was bothering him. After the jump, total transformation. During the skydive, and I landed, I'm like, that was fucking awesome. Just because of the, you could see it, like,
oh, yeah.
It fixed. It's like a fix for him, man. It's, but yeah, yeah, the Freedom Free Fall, where our goal is we're going to try getting 20 veterans out with a tandem with paid video. It's probably going to be hand cam video because of limited capabilities of the 182 aircrafts. But
sure.
Yeah, so our goal is 20 veterans at each drop zone. We've never hit 40. We've come close to like 32 or
sure.
33 one year, but yeah, we're pretty stoked about it. We got an incredible team helping out and planning this thing.
Do you think looking down the road, if it keeps to grow the way that it has, you'd be looking at bringing in an aircraft and other instructors to make a larger event at one facility?
We actually talked about that this year. We talked about having a single event up at Pulaski, by Green Bay there. And we were actually chatting about it before last year's event. We were talking about bringing in a, it was just smaller than a caravan. I can't think of the name of the airplane right now, but we talked logistics because obviously that costs quite a bit of money.
Sure.
But then Hua has to approve their budget for all of their events, and they're paying for this whole thing. So they couldn't approve a budget until January this year. So we thought, let's scale that back just a little bit, but because it's the 10th anniversary, let's split it two different dates, two different drop zones. I think that'll be fun too, you know, and
for sure. Oh, absolutely.
And as you know, 20 tandems out of a 182 is a pretty big feat too.
It's so. A huge day, man. That's a huge day. You'll have to, for next year, you'll have to put the screws to either Rook or Doug and get him to send a big plane for you for gas money. Come on, fellas, you can do it.
We were talking with Keith down at Skydive Midwest.
There you go.
South of Milwaukee there. That's who we were going to get one of his planes. But there's so many logistics involved. And I said to the DZOs up at Skydive Free Fall Adventure, I said, I don't want you guys to lose money on this. That's not the name of the game. Money's obviously a factor. So
sure.
Our screws are always turning for sure. And it's funny you mentioned Rook too, because Seven Hills Skydivers in February, they jump onto Lake Mendota, the frozen lake, and right in front of the state capitol. And we call it the ice jumps. And man, Seven Hills Skydivers is like the little DZ that makes a whole lot of noise because that event picked up a lot of ears. And was it 2 years ago? Rook flew his caravan for it, you know. So, I mean, it just, You make enough noise. That's what I found out. You talk enough, you make enough noise. Skydiving community is really fucking small. I've
And
never
really
met anything
generous, man.
so big but so small. And yeah, generous. Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt.
You know, I mean, I've seen over the years, just as you have, so many different charity organizations and charity jumps, and Doug and CSC do a big one for multiple sclerosis, and obviously Drop Zones across the country and around the world do big charity events. A lot of the British skydivers that I've had on made their very first tandem skydive because they were raising money for charity events to go make their very first jump ever. Like that's a normal thing in the UK. So clearly, reaching out for definite worthwhile charities is something that skydiving has always been a pretty big part of. So who knows, man? I mean, especially with somebody like Rook that I know has been involved in a lot of amazing stuff, and Doug that's done it as well. You never know what's going to happen, and different ways that it can get financed, or different raffles and events that they can have at home to be able to cover their costs to be able to do stuff like that. So I mean, who knows
For
what the
sure.
future holds? But as it stands, you're still 40 different veterans out of a 182. Holy shit, man, that's some proper work and an amazing event.
Yeah, we're excited about it. At Seven Hills Skydivers, it's just me and two other TIs that can do the hand cam video.
Sure.
We got another TI just got a rating. But obviously she can't do the hand cam video, but at Pulaski, I think they've only got one or two TIs, so I'm sure I'll be hucking drugs that day too. Gladfully so. And
I would.
my wife, I have to mention this, she does all the video editing for these. We do a special edit, more so they've got a universal product, you know.
Sure.
The military is all about uniformity, you know. So
Yes, there is no doubt about that. So, hey, as we get towards the backside of the hour, tell people how do they find out more about your specific event? How do they find out more about Hua? If they just want to come out and make a tandem with you, or if they want to chip in with all this going on, how can they reach out?
and so I'm also a board member on a group called Veteran Skydive for Life. We're kind of messing around with our 501c right now, but we do another event in August at a different drop zone. It's much smaller scale, but same concept, same idea. I was asked in 2019 by the founder of that organization, Jim Osterman, if I wanted to step on the board because he knew my history with Freedom Free Fall. So same cause, same team, same battle type thing. And also, we have a Facebook page called Freedom Free Fall. All the information for the events is on there. You can find me on Facebook under Andy Van Handel. Nothing fancy there. And HOOWI, HOOAHWI dot org is where you can donate to all of HOOWI's causes. You donate on there, all the money goes to them, and they put it into all their different multiple programs that they have going on there too. With Veterans Skydive for Life, we also do a charity ride in Michigan. I believe that's in July this year, the end of July. So
Awesome.
yeah, all those. I encourage people, I mean, if you see a veteran, a lot of them don't like hearing thank you for your service. Some veterans don't care for that, but just acknowledge them, you know,
Yeah.
and realize that if they're being an asshole to you, you'll be kind. You don't know what they went through.
Sure. There's something
I'm
else
a
there.
veteran myself, but I'm a 6-year National Guard veteran during peacetime pre 9/11. You
Sure.
know, so I never got deployed or anything, but some of these veterans, sometimes they just need somebody to say hi to them, you know, acknowledge them. We get all the time, we get the Legion guys selling the poppies, you know, at the local gas station, you know, and their face lights up when you just shake their hand and
Sure.
say thanks, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
Now to wrap things up, where the hell did Bad Andy come from?
yeah. So I don't know if you remember late 90s. A lot of people don't believe me, but Domino's Pizza had this campaign with the Bad Andy character. If you don't know it, Google it. It was this little brown Muppet guy that stole everybody's pizza. This isn't because I'm a bigger guy, okay? It's got nothing to do with that. Or maybe it does. But being a bigger guy, I suppose, I would go low on some RW jumps. They get down, they're like, bad Andy. But the Domino's Pizza thing was really popular for about 3 months. And that's where it came from. And I do have to get this out, this little quick little story. We were down at Scott F. Chicago 1 year. I don't remember if it was for Summerfest or not. Planes are going. It's really loud. This goes to my buddy, Russ. This happened in the fucking hangar, not in the fucking bar. We'll take this to our graves with us, okay? But somebody asked me, what's your name? And I said, Bad Andy. She's like, Bad Landing? I'm like, no, Bad Andy. I'm not denying that that part happened. The debate between my buddy and I is where it happened. But it happened at Scott F. Chicago's hangar, south side, on a green vinyl couch. It did not happen in the bar.
All right. Absolutely understood.
We've both agreed we're going to take this to our graves with us and probably do the eulogy that way.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, as you should, right? I mean, sadly, going to skydiver funerals, the one thing you can count on is someone's going to say something inappropriate and fucked up, and it's going to be your favorite part of the entire thing, because that's probably what the dead person would have enjoyed the most.
Exactly.
Andy, I'll tell you what, man, I cannot thank you enough for taking time on Easter Sunday of all days. I know your wife's going to kill you if we keep this up too much longer. So thank you so much for hopping on and talking to us and telling us, not just telling us about the event, but on holding the event and keeping it going and doing something really awesome for these veterans.
Brother, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you having me on, get this thing out there. So, and I'm kind of glad we did it a little bit early too, because we had all alternate plans. Now we can go back to the originals for today.
Well, there you go. Well, it works out perfect, man. I
appreciate it.
Andy, you take care of yourself.
All right, brother. Thank you.
See ya.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe podcast brought to you as always by, well, wait, not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as NZero Sports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective, head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems, check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available, hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or the Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Damn.